Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tried to sign off before Trent got here, but it didn't work. I made it in the studio before I signed off for the week. Hello, Trent Horn.
I made it in just under the wire. You can't keep me out like that, yeah. Kellett. You're going to have to be quicker than that.
Trent Horn is an apologist here at Catholic Answers, prolific writer among his books, Why We're Catholic and Persuasive Pro-Life, and most recently, at least I think it's most recently. You never know. You turn around and Trent's got a new book out, but I think Counterfeit Christ is the most recent book to come out from you, Mr. Trent Horn.
It's the most recent book to be published, but I did finish another book, so I've sent that one off to the press. And that one I'm co-authoring with Catherine Pakalik, who is an associate.
Oh, this is I'm looking forward to reading this.
Yes, yeah. I co-author with her. She is an associate professor of economics at the Catholic University of America. The book is Why Catholics Can't Be Socialists.
Yeah.
Church's teaching is clear on this. In the past 150 years, over 8 major encyclicals, very clear, Catholics cannot be socialists. And we're not going to take questions about that here in the episode, though it may come up organically. But a lot of people think, you can be a Catholic socialist, or what about democratic socialism? We answer all those questions in our book. That will be available probably early spring.
But you don't tell people they have to be capitalists then, do you? Because you don't have to be a capitalist.
It is a permitted belief in the church's teachings.
But sometimes it gets said that way. I think you and I might be slightly different on this.
We might.
I think I'm ahead of you is what I'm saying.
Ahead of me.
Yeah. No, but I think you're more, and I know people are not going to like me saying this, but I have greater reservations about capitalism as a term and as a practice than you have.
Sure.
I think.
There are different attitudes that people have towards free markets and capitalism. When we talk about this in the book, we have a whole section. So the first section, two sections, are on socialism, its historical development, and what the papacy has said about, what the church has said about socialism, going from Leo XIII, Pope Pius XI, Pope John XXIII, all the way up to Pope St. John Paul II. And even to Pope Francis, who condemned the Marxist ideology. We also have a section, though, after that, is capitalism the answer? And so we say, well, what does the church teach about capitalism?
Yeah.
And the church, however, teaches that capitalism and socialism are very different. Capitalism, in principle, is not wrong, though it can be abused.
Okay.
But socialism, in principle, is wrong. And we go into that in great detail in the book. Why? And then there's a broad range of opinions that people can have towards capitalism. I would say that I'm very optimistic about the use of free markets and capitalism to improve human flourishing, to reduce poverty. I'm very optimistic about that. There's other Catholics who are a bit more pessimistic towards that. And there's some Catholics who embrace another form of economics that they would call distributism.
Yeah.
So that's something.
Where everybody gets a cow. Well, that's not exactly what it is. But.
You get three cows.
Three cows.
Yeah, okay. I thought you got three cows and some land.
I'm just being fresh. I don't want to offend anybody because it's a perfectly legitimate.
No,
and
there's nothing wrong. And Catholics can reasonably disagree about the merits of either capitalism or distributism. Distributism was pioneered. It's basically called the Chesterton Bellick thesis. So it was pioneered by G.K. Chesterton, Hilaire Bellick. Bellick's most in-depth treatment would be the servile state. And of course, I'm sure I'll be talking about that a lot, next spring when the book comes out.
And the servile state is good.
Yeah,
there's
a great debate that you can watch online, actually. It was put out by the Acton Institute. It's a debate between Jay Richards, who wrote a book on defending capitalism, and Joseph Pierce, who is a defender of distributism. So, and Father Robert Sirico is the moderator, though he gets in a few more arguments for capitalism. It's almost like two-on-one a little bit with Pierce, but it's a great debate nonetheless. So
I didn't know Joseph Pierce was a distributist.
Oh, yeah.
Another reason to like him.
Yeah.
He's such a fine... I mean, I don't think I'm a distributist, but I do really appreciate many of the things. I'm also of the mind that a lot of times medieval economics is denigrated by modern people who think we invented everything good. And there's a lot of good things in medieval economics. It's not all bad.
I have to admit, I do enjoy when I go to Renaissance festivals that they have far more turkey legs and jousting that I'll see at modern capitalist
associations. The turkey legs were crazy in the Middle Ages. Turkey legs everywhere. Turkey day. Turkey legs for days.
I want three cows, a turkey leg, and a jousting tournament every other Friday. If you could give me that, Si, I would go down your path. So that'll come out in spring, and that'll be Why Catholics Can't Be Socialists, with some commentary on capitalism. But we utter what the church teaches. The church teaches capitalism is not intrinsically wrong like socialism, though it can be abused, and there's certain juridical restraints and frameworks that are necessary for it to protect the individual. So we go on that at length in the book, and hopefully Catherine will come out. Maybe we could do a dual panel show and talk about that in spring when the book's available.
Our number 888-318-7884. If there are news items or aspects of the current state of the church internally or in the world, you're welcome to call. It's the Church in the World today, this hour with Trent Horn, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I wanted to raise, I got a story I want to go to.
Okay.
Because it's a total pet peeve of mine. And I'm not the only one who has it. I'm not claiming it, but it just drives me crazy when people talk in these terms.
Okay.
And it seemed to me that, and I watched some of this, the CNN kind of conversations they had on global warming or climate change, whatever, climate crisis, whatever you're supposed to say now.
Yes. It was 7 hours, right?
Yeah, I couldn't watch the whole thing. I don't think anybody. I mean, can you watch? I couldn't watch 7 hours of The Avengers if you gave that. Well, maybe I could. But the one bothered
me. That
can
solve your climate crisis. Just snap your fingers and get rid of half the people. Actually, it would.
Here's my problem. This is the Thanos solution, and I think that that's what Bernie Sanders was promoting. And it drives me.
You're talking about his comments related to population control,
abortion, and population control, and the apparent embrace of the idea that what we really need is fewer people. This is mind-boggling to me that an intelligent person would say that.
And this is something that even Pope Francis has condemned in his encyclical Laudato Si.
Yeah.
So a lot of people say, well, Laudato Si is the climate change encyclical. No, it's not. It does mention it, but it's about our care and stewardship responsibilities we have to the earth. And it mentions the science surrounding climate change, though it doesn't take definitive positions on those issues. It just says that humans have responsibilities towards the environment, but it does specifically condemn the idea that in order to protect the environment, we have to engage in population control, we have to denigrate the human person.
Right.
And that's a complete wrong-headed way of looking at it, and it's something that has been peddled ever since really the 1960s. Before that, you had in the 19th century, Thomas Malthus was a clergyman who proposed the Malthusian catastrophe theory.
Yeah.
And Malthus basically said, look, food production is arithmetic. This is how we're growing in food production.
Right.
It's 19th century England. We're doing okay, but not great. Population is geometric or even exponential. You know, we're having way too many people and we don't have enough food. So nature's fiercest check, he described it, for stability is famine, that nature uses famine to restore order. And that's what's going to happen because there's too many people. And so people think, well, we got to either increase food production or decrease people.
By the way, this is why economics is called the dismal science.
Yes, that's another term for it, though I think my co-author would chafe at the idea of calling it that. Economics is the science of managing everyday wants. And it is about satisfying unlimited wants for finite resources. And that's a problem. Finite food, what do you do? People usually, and this is in the 1960s, there was the same thing with Paul Ehrlich. Paul Ehrlich wrote The Population Bomb. And what's amazing to me is that these people never lose credibility even if they're demonstrably proven wrong. So Ehrlich wrote in the 1960s, The Population Bomb. He opens the book by saying, the battle to feed humanity is over. Millions will perish from famines. We are past the point of no return. And it didn't happen.
Right.
It didn't happen. Yet he's still taken seriously in many circles, even though all his predictions in the 1960s and 70s were wrong. He was wrong about he believed that all commodities, that major commodities would become more expensive by the year 2000 because they would become more scarce. And another economist, Nigel, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, wagered with him saying, no, those 10 commodities will get cheaper because we'll get more efficient at creating them. And he was right. They became cheaper, not more expensive. And so
when people are creative,
people are the answer. When we are dealing with when we're dealing with issues and problems, we shouldn't think we got to keep people out by using contraception, abortion.
No, that to me is like saying the birthday presents would be way better if we didn't have the person with the birthday here to open them and ruin them. Like that makes no sense. God gave this world and this universe to people. And people certainly have to take care of it. But what is the point of a birthday party if there's no one at the birthday party?
Right. And so
that was lame. Was that a little bit lame? Darren's looking at me like that was a lame analogy. But
now I want birthday cake. We have a birthday cake here at Catholic Answers like every 2 weeks, it feels like.
I want birthday cake too.
So I just want want some cheesecake.
Stay
right
on
now.
Focus here.
I'm focused.
Okay, yeah.
There's not enough cake. There's not enough cake, so we've got to kill off.
The world is running out of
cake.
We have
to kill off the people at the party. No, and what amazes me...
Plenty of turkey legs, but not enough cake.
I'm looking, and obviously as Catholics, we can reasonably disagree about non-intrinsically evil methods to combat climate change and the environment and about the effects that human activity has on climate. But I do think it's something that we should take seriously, but we should not endorse. What amazed me at the town hall, so I'm going to add a little bit of my prudential judgment here. It's not, you know, just my thoughts on this, which I think is fair, that you see at this town hall, you know, people are saying, especially Bernie Sanders will say, oh, well, we need to use contraception and abortion. We need population control, especially in poorer countries, which is kind of eugenic and colonialism.
Oh, please. It's less brown skinned people. I was looking at this thing in Newsweek magazine recently. It was on overpopulation and they had a picture and every single face in the picture, it was hundreds of people, was brown skinned. There was not one white person in there. It's blatantly racist, all this population. I'm sorry. That's not your view. That's not the church's view. That's my view.
Well, I think that that's no. Well, actually, there is a book published by Ignatius Press called Target Africa. That talks about this kind of neo-colonialism of imposing Western values, which people accuse the church of doing all the time, but imposing values of contraception and abortion on these individuals. So my prudential judgment, what I'm amazed is you have someone who will promote this, but not a very simple solution. On my podcast, trendhornpodcast.com, I talk about, on Fridays, I have just random topics. On one of them, I talked about nuclear power. I believe the easiest way to help decrease carbon emissions, make the world safer, cleaner, and save lives is to build more nuclear power plants. It gets us away from dirty energy that kills people. People worry about, you know, they watched Chernobyl on HBO, which is scary to watch. But that's like saying, I'm never going to go on a cruise again because I watched Titanic. You know, we have learned from that. The reactor used at Chernobyl has never been manufactured to be used ever outside of the Soviet Union. It was a horrible design. But now you have places like France. France derives 70% of its energy from nuclear power.
Yes, right.
And it's safe. Whereas now you worry about, well, what about nuclear accidents or deaths? The fact of the matter is, around the world, people who are using coal, brown coal, oil, that kills millions of people a year because of the pollutants that get in the air and get in people's lungs. But nobody thinks about that. So for me...
No, we're going to get rid of people first.
Yeah, that's people are the problem. Instead, let's try for innovation. And so I feel like almost when I hear people talk about the environment, but they are not in favor of nuclear energy. And so you say, what about nuclear waste? What about accidents? I talk about that in the podcast. You can go to trendhornpodcast.com to hear my answers to that. I almost feel like it's like kind of like a religious opposition. It's like a purity thing. Like, why I can't be for this kind of stuff. And so, but that's irrational. That we can come up with rational solutions that promote human good and human flourishing without relying on intrinsic evils or the exploitation of people to do so. We should be able to do it, and we should have a conversation about that.
Thanks. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I'm just looking for a presidential candidate who will say into the camera, babies are good. It's up to moms and dads to regulate the births of babies. It is not up to the government to get involved in that, in the baby business.
That's the candidate
I'm looking for.
Yeah, I like the idea of actually, I have a book in my office by Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse called It Takes a Family to Raise a Village.
Oh, I see what she did there.
Yeah, she's good. It's a great book.
We'll be right back with more with Trent Horn, Church in the World. Tons of people want to talk to you about the church currently in the news on various things. We'll get to those calls as soon as we come back right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support on the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Listeners to Catholic Radio, I think, benefit most, at least initially, from what I call remedial catechesis. What Catholic Radio does is it becomes an echo chamber for the teaching authority of the Catholic Church. And what we're doing is teaching many things which have been neglected over the last 40, 50 years. If you listen to Catholic Radio, you know what the Catholic Church teaches.
Al Cresta thinks Catholic Radio is important. So should you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and we try to have a little bit of fun on Fridays, and it's always fun when Trent Horn is here, and it's always fun when we get Trent talking. I don't know why I get mad about stuff when Trent's here, but we're talking about church in the world. If you've got questions in that regard, if you've got an issue you want to raise, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. I got a bunch more stories I wanted to go through, but there's a ton of callers. What do you want to do?
Let's take a few callers, but then I like to get to some of these other stories because I think I lit a fire under a few people, and I'm happy to address their questions.
With the socialism thing?
Who would have thought, right?
Yeah. Okay. Al in Marcellus, New York, watching on YouTube Live. You are up first. Al, your question for Trent Horn.
Yes. My question is, I want to get Trent's take on why there is such a fixation with the Catholic Church in the media, since supposedly we live in a post-Christian era and we always hear talk about the nuns.
Right.
So one example I had in mind, and I know you talked about a little bit about this in your podcast, is the whole Harry Potter story, the banned books. It just seems odd to me that, for a grade school that I think the student body there is like maybe 350 kids.
Yeah.
Why, you'd have these.
Why is that big news?
National outlets carrying this story in the first place. So just kind of to get your take on it.
Sure. And actually, I was hoping to talk about that a little bit with Cy, because I actually just did two podcasts on that controversy. One where I briefly discussed the news item in Tennessee. The principal at the school has banned Harry Potter in the library. Students can bring the book from home. But at the advice of some exorcists, he banned the book, worried that it contributed poor morals to the students and could contain real spells that were hazardous to their health. And then some people sent me a video from a prominent exorcist talking about why Harry Potter is spiritually dangerous. I actually listened to that video, though I found in that video many statements that were unsubstantiated or actually inaccurate or false. And so I address those actually on my podcast. My most recent episode was on Thursday. If you want to check that out, go to trenthornpodcast.com and you can scroll down and see the episodes on Harry Potter to get my take on it. And if we can get back to Harry Potter here, we got other questions. I'm happy to share my thoughts on the matter, because Catholics are divided about this particular issue. The church does not have an official teaching on this particular book or its permissibility to read among Catholics. And Catholics are divided about whether it's suitable or unsuitable. Though, Al, I will say that I think a lot of news outlets go after the church because they want to stoke a culture war between Christians and non-Christians. And the Catholic Church is just such a large, visible, organized, symbolic representation of Christianity, more so than really any other, church or denomination that exists. I think that many people in media who might have a fixation on the Catholic Church, odds are they're non-practicing Catholics themselves. They have a background to this. I think there's statistics say that one in every 10 people in the country is a non-practicing Catholic. So I wouldn't be surprised that many people, especially back east and in media and academia, you always hear somebody say, Cy, well, I went to Catholic school, so
yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard someone say, well, I went to Catholic school, we would never have to do a pledge drive again for Catholic Answers Live. The amount of times I've heard that. So I think that might be one of the probably the primary reasons, just a symbolic representation of Christianity. It's a foil to perpetuate the tropes of the ideas that, well, faith and reason are opposed, Christians have these agendas.
Yep.
And then, but even the Harry Potter one, though, I'll say that I do think it can be newsworthy because Harry Potter is just a very famous book, and many people, who would never imagine banning a book, that it's kind of a man bites dog sort of story. Like, wait, what is this? Like, it's similar stories you'll find all over the news that are surprising or shocking. And that's a shocking thing to many people. And it also confirms prejudices in them that Christians are unreasonable. And that's where Catholics can disagree and have a discussion about whether these particular books are suitable or not suitable. My opinion after looking at the matter is it's up to individuals to use their prudential judgment. If you feel like this book is something that can encourage you to engage in occult activity, you shouldn't read it. But on the whole, I consider it fantasy literature, and its depictions of magic are on par with depictions you would see in Lord of the Rings and Tolkien and in other fantasy works. And so I have not been convinced of evidence that the Harry Potter books contain real spells. The evidence that has been put forward to me that they are real spells is, to me, severely lacking. In fact, I looked at a list of the spells, and they're just Latin words. They're just Latin words, or they're corrupted Latin words that refer to, you know, if you're doing a spell about water or the head, it has agua or calvaria in it. It's, you know, they're not, yeah. So that's, and then you can hear more about that on my podcast. But for me, I think that it's not universally or categorically unsuitable. It's up to people's individual judgment. But thanks for calling in.
Al, thank you very, very much. We're talking about the church in the world today with Trent Horn. You're welcome to call on anything that fits in with that topic of the church in the world. If it's going on in the world and you think the church has a take on it, or if there's commentary being made about the church out there, 888-318-7884. Let's go to Josh in Columbia, Maryland. You are up next, Josh. Your question for Trent Horn.
Hey, Trent, how you doing?
So, howdy, Josh.
I noticed earlier you said that a Catholic cannot be socialist.
Right.
My question is I noticed news articles stating that the Pope has affirmed socialism, like places from like the Forbes or New York Times.
Right.
Are these articles like incorrect, or are they just really biased? 'Cause I know newspapers are not always the most accurate piece of literature in the world.
Yeah, they're not accurate. And also the problem is that in our discourse, especially the word socialist or socialism is very malleable. It has a lot of different meanings to people, many of them being incorrect. So you'll have people who say that any government involvement in the economy, so any government entitlement program like Social Security or Medicaid, or food stamps or public schooling, that is full-blown socialism, and it's no different than the socialism in the Soviet Union. And that's not the case. What Catherine and I argue in our book is that socialism versus capitalism exists on a spectrum. And the question is, the means of production, the means of producing goods and services, are those things, do they belong to private enterprise primarily, or government primarily? In a socialist economy, they'll say that the community as a whole owns these things, but usually it's government and government bureaucrats who own the vast majority of the means of production. So when you look at classically socialist countries like the Soviet Union, Maoist China, and to a great extent today, Venezuela would be another prime example, government owns the vast majority of industries. They own them, and so they produce goods. And or Cuba is another good example of this. There's no private or free market for people to freely exchange goods and services with one another. Government just produces goods and then allocates them based on need. And as we show in our book, that is antithetical to the nature of the human person, the right to private property that Pope Leo XIII expresses in Rerum Novarum. So when Pope Francis, for example, is critical of capitalism, which is fine because Adam Smith, the founder of economics that many people associate with capitalism, he himself was very critical of free markets and how business leaders could exploit people. Hayek, for example, F.A. Hayek was a fierce critic of socialism, but he also recognized some of the tragic elements in capitalism. That it's a fallacy to say that any government involvement in the economy is full-blown socialism. That's not the case. So some people will take Pope Francis's endorsement of government entitlement programs or his criticism of the excesses of free markets, which are valid criticisms, and say, oh, well, he's a socialist. But he assuredly is not. And in the book, we talk about how Pope Francis, in his 2016 trip to the United States in front of Congress, the Pope actually defended the role of private businesses and how, if that's operated ethically, it can produce wealth and human flourishing for people. So definitely, you'll have to check out the book for the full explanation, but is that helpful for now?
Yeah. So what's the book called again?
The book will be called, at least it's tentatively now called, Why Catholics Can't Be Socialists. But just to summarize quickly, Pope Francis and other popes, Pope St. John Paul II, was critical of capitalism. There's a famous clause, or famous paragraphs in his encyclical Centesimus Annos, where he asks rhetorically, or figuratively, rhetorically, is capitalism the answer for third world poverty? And he says, well, it depends what you mean by capitalism. Yeah. If you mean by unrestrained capitalism that exploits people, no. If you mean a fair free market where people can exchange goods and services to grow wealth and grow businesses, yes. So, and you see these same kind of things in Pope Francis, but you don't see him endorsing full-fledged socialism by any means.
Again, 888-318-7884 is the number. Trent Horn is here on this Friday afternoon with us, and the church in the world is our topic. It doesn't have to be a news story that we have discussed, or it certainly doesn't have to be about socialism. We want to talk about Harry Potter or nuclear energy, you can do that. But anything else that is on the table right now as far as the church and the news and the world, you are welcome to call with your question. 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more calls for Trent.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley, the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
Looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker for your event? Catholic Answers speakers will inform and inspire your audience to grow in their Catholic faith. For more information on booking a Catholic Answers speaker, visit CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com today.
In his new audio presentation, The Very First Fathers, apologist Jimmy Akin takes you on a tour of the earliest Christian writings outside the New Testament. From the most famous figures and most notable works to those lesser known but no less important, this pivotal time in the development of the early church is revealed in fascinating detail. Jimmy shows how, even in the first century after the resurrection, it was necessary to defend and explain truths that are still under attack today, such as the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist and the perpetual virginity of Mary. The Very First Fathers is a compelling look at the dawn of the Christian age and edifying listening for anyone who wants to understand and defend the full truth of Catholicism. Order your copy of The Very First Fathers today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the church in the world this hour. Trent Horn, our guest, 888-318-7884, our number, 888-318-7884. If you've got a question about something going on in the world, especially as it relates to the Catholic faith, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Trent, there are more questions on socialism. We can go to them if you want, but I did want to ask you, because we're heading down to Australia pretty soon, a lot of us Catholic Answers folks.
That's right.
You heard this story about this Australian rugby player? Like, you can get fired for being Christian now?
Yes. So this was back in, I think, May of this year. Israel Folau was an Australian rugby player who posted, well, it's funny when you read news articles about this, because I was trying to bring it up for the discussion. I picked the first one from NBC News, and it just says, rugby player sacked after posting homophobic comments online.
It's just dirty pool.
But yeah, because then I look in the article, and yay, modern journalism, it doesn't have the comments. The story, like, what did he actually write?
No.
And it's not in the story. So then I have to go somewhere else. And basically, what Folau wrote was a paraphrase of 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 10, where Paul says, "Do not be deceived. There are those who will not inherit the kingdom of God. The porneia, those who engage in fornication, idolatria, the idolaters, adulterers, drunkards, revilers, carousers, greedy, thieves. And he uses two Greek words, arsenokoitai and malakoi, which refer to individuals who engage in same-sex behavior. And so Folau said, you know, these people will go to hell, as presumably if they don't believe in Jesus, or if you're one of these people, you'll be separated from God for all eternity. He said you'll go to hell. And so now that's considered, well, that's an attack on people.
Carousers.
Right. It's funny. It's like, it's homophobic. It's like, well, what about being drunkophobic?
I don't actually know what a carouser is, but I probably should find that out.
Yeah. Well, in the Bible, it's connected together. You'll notice in this passage, it's very interesting. The sins are often connected. So the arsenokoitai and the malakoi are connected, the active and passive partners in same-sex behavior. Paul is clear. This is also an argument against the claim that you'll have revisionist theologians who say, well, Paul's only condemning pederasty.
Oh,
he was condemning man-boy love, not loving committed adult same-sex relationships, which doesn't work because, one, Paul could have used the Greek word paiderastes, and he doesn't. Instead, they'll say, well, those two individuals are men exploiting little boys.
Yeah.
To which I'll say, so Paul is saying the little boys are going to hell? Why doesn't he just say the arsenokoitai are going to hell? He also includes the malakoi. These two individuals are equal partners, along with those who engage in porneia and adultery. He's saying these sexual sins, these other sins against the body, drunkenness, greed, thievery. Carousing is just kind of like, you know, drunken revelry would be a good way maybe to describe what carousing is. That it's a warning, and it's an important one, that you're not going to be receptive to the good news of Jesus Christ unless you're fully aware and concerned about the bad news related to sin. That's something we miss a lot. And so what's funny is there's actually a reply from Peter Singer, who is Australian himself. I think he teaches at Princeton now, but he's Australian. He's probably one of the world's most famous philosophers. He sees nothing wrong with homosexual behavior. But he says this. He says, if Rugby Australia had existed in the first century of the Christian era, and Paul had had enough talent to be a contracted player, Rugby Australia would presumably have ripped up his contract once his letter to the Corinthians became public.
Right.
And so he goes on to say that the thing is, for anyone outside this particular faith, it's hard to take such beliefs seriously. But try putting yourself in the position of someone with Folau's belief. You see people on a path toward a terrible fate, much worse than getting lung cancer, and they're blind to what awaits them. Wouldn't you want to warn them and give them the chance to avoid that awful fate? I assume that is what Folau believes he is doing.
Yeah.
And so it's so funny. Even someone who, like Peter Singer, I have a begrudging respect for Singer because he is an extremely intelligent individual. He's very smart. And because he's so smart, he's willing to hold perfectly consistent beliefs, even if they're wrong. So, for example, on abortion, he says, no, it's obvious that an unborn child is a human being, and there's no morally relevant difference between a human fetus and a newborn.
But you can kill both.
But you just kill both. So his views are hard to refute because they're so consistent.
Yeah, right.
So, and that's a virtue, at least to that he's thought it through. And so he sees here, well, wait a minute. Why are you saying this is an attack? If Folau is right, you should be listening to him and doing what he has to say. That's what we need to be talking about here. But in our world, people just don't want to stop and think. It's just, that offends me, I'm canceling it. It's part of cancel culture. Which is a big thing people are talking about now.
What does that mean, cancel culture?
Cancel culture is the idea, and this is brought up a little bit. We're talking about Church of the News. It's brought up a little bit in Dave Chappelle's new comedy stand-up special, Sticks and Stones, actually. He takes aim at this.
Are there any swear words in that?
There may be a few.
Okay.
Yes, there are a few indeed. So it's so you might categorize it as morally offensive for mature audiences. But I appreciate some of the truths that come through there. And so there are a lot of people who are very secular who will say something that is not politically correct. We used to call this political correctness in the 90s.
Oh, and now it's called cancel culture?
Yes, because now with social media, if you do something politically incorrect, a mob can form online and then demand that you be canceled.
That's going to happen to you, Trent. That's got to happen to you. You are like the perfect guy to cancel because you say things that are...
But here's the problem. I am someone who it's expected I say these kind of loopy things.
I
work for Catholic Answers.
Oh.
Now, if I were Trent Horn and I worked in Hollywood, maybe as Miles Teller's stunt double, some people say I bear a passing resemblance to him. they might say, we don't want him working in this movie. Like, you know, if it's like you're in the secular rugby team or you're in Hollywood or a Fortune 500 company, that is where you end up getting canceled because
if you get out of line, we're going to cancel your ticket to be here in Hollywood. Or
and
whatever.
It's not just that. It could be anything. So people like Chappelle have been critical of comedians. Like, people, you make one mistake, you say something. Cancel culture is this idea. It's kind of a virtual lynch mob.
Yeah.
That you say one off-color thing. You make a mistake in your past.
Yeah.
And you said something inappropriate, or you told a joke that was inappropriate, you put it online. And then it can find you 5, 10, 15, 20 years later, and people say, you're done. We're canceling you. You deserve to be canceled. You can't say, I'm sorry, I was young when I said that. That was inappropriate. I've learned from then.
Right.
People are not allowed to grow. It's just, it's out. It's a search and destroy kind of mission for people.
Yeah. I have to say, I don't think Jesus would approve of that.
We have a little thing called mercy and repentance.
That has nothing to do, like, if you're involved in that, you got to get away from that. If you're involved in cancel culture, because that is inimical to the gospel.
It foments anger and not wanting mercy
and
or
self-righteousness.
Growth. Yes.
And come on.
And it's also hard because it gives people, well, here, I can have my own little rant right now. It gives people, and I get into a trap on social media where I give it too much importance. It's like I'll debate people too much on social media. But I encourage everyone listening, don't take social media that seriously. That honestly,
yeah, who cares?
The opinions people have on Twitter and Facebook, they don't really matter. They're not that representative. Now, I'm on social media because I want to. I believe St. Paul would be on social media. It's the new Areopagus to spread the gospel. And I want to be on that platform to reach people. So I think it's important. But I've also had a hard time, and I'm trying to manage not giving it more time and attention and energy than it deserves. Because the problem with cancel culture is you'll have, you know, oh gosh, these thousands of people on Twitter are demanding this person be fired or demanding this rugby player be kicked out of the team. When actually,
you can't play rugby because you have a Christian thought.
That's right.
That's evil.
And that the problem here is people say, well, it's discrimination, right? But you're not allowing him to have his sincere Christian beliefs. He's not using a slur. He's not saying anything about these. He's saying this behavior is sinful, and I'm concerned about those who engage in it. But the thing with, like, take Twitter, for example. I think the statistics show that only 20% of the population has a Twitter account, and among those accounts, something like only, like, 2 to 5% of them are responsible for 80% of social media conduct on Twitter. So you'll get
so
people,
like 1% of the actual population.
That's right. So when you think Twitter and Facebook are reflective of what the real world thinks, it's not true. And so you can get sucked into this rabbit hole where we'll have people listening here to our radio show who will go online and argue for hours and hours with people on social media. And I would say, I think a lot of times that's for naught.
Yeah,
that your time could be better spent in the Adoration Chapel. Or if you see someone on social media, get into an argument with them, say, I don't want to talk with you here. Can we have an email exchange? Can I call you on the phone? And I have seen in my own interactions that I had someone on social media who was very critical of me. And I had him come into the studio to have a dialogue.
Yeah.
Completely different. He apologized for being rude, and we had a civil conversation.
How interesting.
You can't do that on social media very well. So that's why I'm skeptical about it.
You do have to get a bit of a, I don't care what they're saying on social media. I mean, we have to not turn over our moral agency to the people who are making the decisions about what goes on entertainment tonight, or, you know, or what the next sitcom is going to be. That is a power you don't want those folks to have.
Right.
Especially if they're canceling, if they're going around canceling people. And you know what? Also, as Christians, if somebody's an anti-Christian and they're a rugby player, don't try to get them kicked off the rugby team because they're anti-Christian. That's not
right. If there was an atheist on a team, says like
Christian
says Christianity is delusional, I'd say, well, let's have a conversation with him.
Not like I'm going to take your job away.
Yeah.
I don't want you to make a living playing rugby.
Right.
I mean, I really don't think anybody should make a living playing rugby. I don't actually know why. I'm sure rugby is a perfectly fine sport.
I would want to join in with you in this side, but the problem is I don't entirely know the ins and outs of rugby. I just know, like, my understanding of rugby is it's like a hardcore combination of football and soccer.
and knife fighting, I think. I think it's a combo.
You get beat up pretty. They get beat up pretty well in rugby.
It's like mixed martial arts.
I'm more of an air hockey guy myself.
All right, 888. So all right, so Australia, get your act together. Is that where you come down on this? Come on.
Well, I would say it's, but it's not just there. You see this kind of thing here all the time. Where where you see the president of Mozilla Firefox, for example, was found out he donated to a campaign to define marriage as the union of a man and woman, and they said, "Oh, he's anti-gay. He's got to go. He gets fired from the company." That now we're moving to the point where your Christian beliefs—it's not that we can have disagreement in the public square about contemporary issues. It's just you are guilty of a secular heresy, and you get excommunicated.
Yeah,
and so that's concerning. That Christians, we won't be able to share the gospel. That we will just be essentially shut out from the conversation entirely. That's concerning.
The worst, though, is when the companies themselves do it. Like if Facebook, you know, succumbs to pressure, and Twitter succumbs to pressure, and then you, Trent Horn, can't be on there anymore.
Yeah, that's called deplatforming.
Yeah,
and that is something that has come up because here we have a problem here is that Facebook and Twitter are private companies.
Yeah,
but they've created essentially public squares where most people engage in debate and dialogue with one another. If they end up controlling the message and only allowing certain views to be heard, then suddenly a large group with a very important view, you know, the gospel, become shut out and others can't hear it.
Yeah.
So we should hold them accountable and make them see, well, you know, show your true colors. Either say you admit you have a bias or have an unbiased platform.
Also on that Twitter thing.
Yes.
The president is on Twitter. I don't know if you knew that, but President Donald Trump occasionally will tweet.
I have heard that he tweets every now and then.
Yeah.
I have heard that, but I only follow two people on Twitter.
Two
accounts. I follow Catholic Answers and the Pope. So, you know, I think I'll listen to what they got to say. My boss and my other boss.
I don't think it's really the Pope.
You don't think
No, I think I think it really is the president.
Well, I don't know. We have social media people here at Catholic Answers. I don't think Chris does every single tweet that we send out.
I don't think Chris knows how to. We'll be right back with more Church in the World with Trent Horn right after this.
Glad you're with us. Join us on air with your questions today on Catholic Answers Live.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets in a non-confrontational way. Visit our website, www.streetevangelization.com, to learn more. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's time to do our part.
Catherine Zeltner.
There are so many misconceptions when it comes to abortion and assisted suicide. It's really confusing, and I think for a lot of people, they don't know how to talk about these things. EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, we help to change that. We help to really untangle these web of lies. Listeners can expect to become informed and then grow more confident so that they can then discuss and dialogue these issues, and together we can really impact culture in that way.
EWTN Pro-Life Weekly, Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. The number, Trent Horn, our guest, until he gets canceled by cancel culture. Let's go to some calls, Trent. Let's start with...
Well, actually, Cy, I could get canceled.
Yeah?
Because I have my podcast, TrentHornPodcast.com, right now is hosted on Patreon. And so it's possible people may say that Trent Horn is violating Patreon terms of service because he says homosexual behavior is intrinsically disordered, sinful, or I talk about transgender identity or a host of other things. So Patreon has canceled other people for having views that they disagree with. And so for me, it's something, and I know people, Matt Frad, for example, who was formerly with Catholic Answers and now does Pints with Aquinas. He was disinvited from Google. Because they found out, they looked at one tweet he had where he said that homosexual behavior is disordered. And the LGBT group at Google said he makes us unsafe. So he was disinvited.
I don't think you get it. All that LGBT, it's about tolerance and patience and loving people.
Right, for everyone, right?
For everyone, Trent. let us go now to Jerry in Olympia, Washington, watching or listening, excuse me, on WETN Radio. Jerry, we made you wait a long time. Your question or comment for Trent.
Okay, earlier you spoke about the church being against democratic socialism.
Yes, it's really hard to hear you, Jerry. Trent was talking.
Is this any better?
Yeah, just give it everything you got.
Okay. Earlier you talked about democratic socialism being, the church being against that, and I'm thinking all they're asking for is Social Security, universal Medicare, and free college education. Why is the church against them?
Okay. I didn't say that the church was against democratic socialism. I said the church is against socialism, and then I said, but what about democratic socialism, which is something that we do address in the book. What should Catholics believe about democratic socialism? And it depends what you mean by the term. So we define socialism as government control of the means of production. So government owns businesses, it redistributes wealth so that people are not able to maintain control and grow private property. So, but what is democratic socialism? Well, it means different things to different people. And in fact, Pope Pius XI talked about moderate socialism in his encyclical Quadragesimo Anno. And he says that moderate socialism does not have anything in it that differs from Christian charity. So it's redundant. There's no reason for Catholics to embrace moderate socialism, such as, and there's, you know, that relates somewhat to what we would call social welfare, the idea of government providing benefits for people. So you're talking about social welfare programs. Government gives people money for healthcare, gives them Social Security income, provides them money for college or pays for college itself. The problem becomes as you move along the spectrum towards government owning the means of production. So, for example, food stamps are social welfare. That's the government giving people some resources so that they can afford things like food and things like that. When the government owns grocery stores and sells food at lower than market prices for people and outlaws private competition, that's socialism. And that's something you have in Venezuela, which leads to shortages and leads to all kinds of terrible things. All socialist governments invariably end up with shortages because they violate basic laws of economics related to supply and demand. So it depends what you mean by democratic socialism. If it's a kind of moderate socialism that's social welfare programs to help people, then that's fine, but that's not socialism. If it's a lot of people, when you read in Jacobin Magazine and the Democratic Socialists of America, people use the term democratic socialism to mean the implementation of socialism, the end of free markets and private property through a democratic process. If that is what is meant by democratic socialism, Catholics cannot be democratic socialists. Socialism is inappropriate whether you get it through one demand of a dictator or 51% of the vote.
Jerry, thanks. We'll leave it there because we want to get to more callers. Robert in Toledo, Ohio, listening on the GRN app. You are next. Robert, your question for Trent Horn.
Toledo, Ohio, it's actually Aledo, Texas. Sorry if I wasn't talking too clearly.
It wasn't Marie's fault. Don't blame Marie, the phone screener, okay? It was not her fault. Go ahead, Robert.
All right, so Disney has been getting a lot of flack from people who usually like it. Like, one of the most recent things...
Wait, who has been getting flack?
Disney.
Ah.
Basically, my question is, what are you to do about mega corporations like Disney, who, when they acquired 20th Century Fox, essentially owned every... essentially has become the owner of every major TV news network in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
which, as I recall, violates antitrust laws.
Sure. And I think, actually, this gets into a little bit in a tangent to our book on socialism and capitalism. So what should Catholics believe about that? Even capitalism itself, we don't argue for an unbridled, laissez-faire, hands-off kind of capitalism. There can be dangers in free market economies of things like monopolies existing. So a monopoly would occur when one provider of a good or service has complete control over that, and no one else can enter the market to provide that kind of good or service. However, typically throughout history, monopolies can really only occur with government backing or through other kinds of legal restrictions. Because if you have a free market and you have one organization that provides the good or service, it loses its monopolistic hold if it raises prices too high, for example, and then competitors can come in to offer the same service at a lower price. Though there will be cases, of course, then some people can maintain a monopoly if you get government to outlaw competition, utilizing patents and things like that. So, for example, people have said that Disney, in order to get back Spider-Man into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, should just buy Sony outright. And they probably could. They may be rich enough to do that, but they probably can't, because you're right, that would violate antitrust laws. So what we talk about in our book on socialism is that the nitty-gritty elements of capitalism, Catholics can reasonably disagree about how to have a fair, just, and equitable system in a free market. It just has to correspond to what the popes have called principles of right order. And so people can disagree about how to keep businesses regulated so that unfair or unjust monopolies don't arise. My personal opinion is that if you allow for free market activity to occur, if you can prevent hindrances or obstacles from people entering the market, that can help to break up monopolies. So I think that it's also important when we look at, when we look at other news media sources, mass communication, we have to be careful that sometimes if media is part of a conglomerate, we might only be getting half the story on things. So that's why when you hear stories about the Catholic Church, about other things like that, check for the bias. And what's nice about the internet is you can peruse a lot of different sources to try to get the whole story. So hope that's helpful, and thank you for calling.
Okay, Robert, thank you very, very much. Again, 888-31-TRUTH, the number. Oh, we're talking about the church in the world. I better get to John in Sydney, Australia. John, we're coming to Sydney, Australia. I don't know if you know about that. Are you there with us, John?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, Catholic Answers is coming to Sydney, Australia on the weekend of October 11th.
Oh, okay. No worries. Well, you guys have got an awesome show. I'm always listening to your videos and to your live streams, and it's really fantastic. I love it. It's awesome.
Well, thank you very much. You got something about the church in the world?
Well, actually, I'm just digressing a little bit over here. I just wanted to ask, why is it I seem to get conflicting advice from even clergy as to the authenticity of figures in the Old Testament? Like, for example, when we talk about the book of Job and even Genesis and so forth, even
right,
some clergy tell me that these are fictional characters who never even existed.
Right.
I mean, that'd be a bit weird. It's not as if the church just all of a sudden invents figures to fit a jigsaw puzzle, does it?
For those who have trouble with Australian, also the connection isn't great, John.
The question is, John seems like he's heard conflicting answers about questions related to the Bible. Specifically, are certain characters in the Bible, do they correspond to real historical persons, or are they fictional persons part of a fictional account? So, for example, some people say that Job is a historical individual and that the book of Job is a historical account. Other people say that Job is a fictional character as part of a didactic narrative, a story meant to teach a valuable lesson. So how should we respond to that? Well, first I'll say that the church does not have a definitive teaching about every question we have related to the Bible. In fact, the church has relatively few definitive or infallible teachings about truths that are related to sacred scripture. Now, what she does have are those that are the ones that are central to our faith, that Jesus is a real historical individual. He was born of a virgin, crucified, rose from the dead. That is not something that is just purely fictional or allegorical. But there are other questions biblical scholars raise in their study of scripture that the church has not officially weighed in on. And because of that, the church allows a diversity of opinions on many of these questions that are raised and allows biblical scholars to engage in their field of expertise to answer them. So when it comes to genre, I think we can agree. I think we'll all agree that there are some genres in Scripture, there are some stories in Scripture that are purely stories. Most people would say that the parable of the prodigal son is a fictional story Jesus told for the purpose of communicating a truth to people, that there wasn't an actual historical prodigal son. But on the other hand, there's historical elements. So some people say that Job is a historical individual, but even Pope St. John Paul II said that the book of Job, the book of Judith, seem to have elements, or Tobit, are more like didactic fiction, but the church allows a diversity of opinion on those questions that is not definitively settled.
John from Sydney, Australia, thanks for the call. Hope you have a good morning. I forgot to ask him what tomorrow's going to be.
John, I'm going to say good day to you. Stay on the line. I'd like to send John my book, Hard Sayings. It goes into this in more detail. John, stay on the line. Good day to you, and I want to get you Hard Sayings.
Thanks, Trent Horn.
Thank you, Cy Kellett.
We'll see you next time, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.
The show's boomeranging around to people. That was terrible.
Trent, that's the worst, Australia. Come on, Trent.
Crikey.